It's episode 105 of Dive in the Podcast with special guest Colin Hansen. Dive in the Podcast is a bi-weekly all-about-diving podcast for everyone. Whether you explore the oceans as a snorkeler, scuba diver, free diver, or tech diver, Dive In has something for you. The show is filled with diving news, feature interviews with guests from around the world, interesting dive topics, and ocean advocacy. Visit diveinpod.com to find out more about the show, past guests, and our Patreon.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amit.
I'm April.
I'm Justin, and we're the hosts of Dive in the Podcast. Before we start today's episode, I'd like to thank you, the listeners. Thanks for tuning in every week. Your support encourages us to keep going, making a bigger and better podcast. If you enjoy listening to our show, you can leave us a review on your podcast app or at podchaser.com. Reviews are one of the best ways to help others find the podcast. Last week, we had Jen Meisner on. She's a fun person to chat with. She's always a lot of fun to chat with in person. She was great to have on the show last week.
She was fun to have on the show. It's good to have a nudie girl on the show representing and, you know, another Bay girl. We always say we're the Bay girls of the Sea Foxes. So, you know, it was good.
And between this episode and the last episode, you don't have to take a shot, just a drink of beer, but every time you hear someone say nudie, you will be really drunk.
Hammered.
One
of those ones.
Is one of those ones, isn't it?
All right. Well, yeah, Jen was fun and a great interview. And we have another great interview this week. Later on in the show, we'll be talking about gear shaming. But first tonight, we're talking to Colin Hansen. We'll chat with him about his diving career, you know, his coming up in the diving world and shooting photos underwater and above land. And his art and what that art is used for and his current and upcoming projects. Colin Hansen is a trained artist who spends his days creating 3D lighting effects for television and his nights diving underwater and making the coolest nudibranch stickers you've ever seen. He's a diver from British Columbia, Canada. His art adorns the tanks of many local divers here in Nova Scotia. So welcome to the podcast, Colin. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us from the other coast, the left coast. We're on the right coast out here.
Right.
We'll officially start your interview in a minute, Colin. But before that, have you ever dove in any kelp forest before?
Ooh, once or twice, and it was lovely. Yeah. Hoping to head out there again in the summer and do some more.
Yeah, they are magical spots. Well, in case you missed it, the website kelpwatch.org has launched. It's a collaboration between Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, the Nature Conservancy, UCLA, UC Santa Barbara. And they got together to launch the world's largest kelp map. On the website kelpwatch.org, they explain it best. So I'm just going to read a little thing they have here. Quote, kelp forests provide a myriad of benefits to nature and the people in the oceans around the world. They form the backbone of the ecosystems in which they are found, providing habitat for food for thousands of species. However, kelp forests around the world are facing increased threats due to climate change, overfishing, and harvesting. In order to protect and conserve these critical ecosystems, in the face of a changing ocean, we must improve the way we map and monitor them. Our researchers have demonstrated that by analyzing satellite imagery of coastal waters and machine learning algorithms, it's possible to estimate the presence and size of kelp forests and observe how they change over time. The innovative, cost-effective, and replicable approach is the first step towards monitoring kelp forest dynamics at scale. End quote. We've had lots of guests on the show from the west coast of the U.S. and they like to dive in these magical kelp forests and really, I was clicking around on the website and really took me back to some of the old dive sites I used to dive out in Southern California. And it's really neat. And it's cool. It's a great way for these researchers and resource managers to have an amazing tool in their toolbox.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool overall. I think I'd one of the things I'm always curious about, because we have, I won't call them siloed, but we have a lot of situations where people are doing individual research from different non-governmental agencies, or in some cases affiliated with a governmental agency or with funding via, you know, government funds. I'm always curious about how we can wrap this information into like holistic kind of systems thinking processes, right? Like when we get into the place where we're saying the kelp forests are contributing to this, but yet we know like, you know, the other part of the ecosystem is doing this and we have this, you know, at what point, who's like bringing all this data together so that you can have sort of a collaborative experience with the researchers. So, I don't know. We got like, obviously this is fantastic. It's great that they're doing that. I'd love to see what their impressions are on the impact for the overall ocean conservation efforts and how they're kind of collaborating to be able to like bring that information forward. So very cool initiative, certainly. And I mean, I've yet to dive in one of these amazing kelp forests that you keep teasing me about, Justin. So maybe one day if these guys continue to keep it, you know, keep it on the up and up here, I might get an opportunity. And hey, what better thing to see? So yeah. But I don't know, when you were doing the research there, did you find anything related to how they're linking this back to other research?
No, it literally just launched days ago, so be interesting to see where it goes and how it's used, but I'll report back when I know more.
All right, you get a hold of those guys at kelpwatch.org and tell them have a chat.
we'll reach out. Maybe we get somebody from kelp from Woods Hole or something on the pod.
Hey, now we're talking.
We'll talk kelp.
We'll talk kelp. Yeah. To kelp and all the kelp heads. That's a new phrase I've coined for people who like to dive in kelp. Feel free to use it. Kelp heads. Yeah. It's a good one. All right. Now that you're all caught up, it is time to dive in with Colin Hansen. So, Colin, we'll start off easy. Where are you from?
Oh, BC. Actually, just outside of Vancouver. So, New Westminster is where I call home.
Okay.
What was your first memory of the water, Colin?
I think it's very like cloudy, but when I was a kid, we took a trip out to Vancouver Island and I was out tide pooling at just outside of Ucalet, and just seeing the ocean was incredible. Apparently, also on that trip, we went to the other side briefly and we're at Parksville and they have this massive, massive beach, and the water, like the tide exchange, is pretty dramatic. And it comes in really, really fast. And apparently when I was a little kid, I confused tide with the tidal wave. And I was trying to clear people off a beach because the tidal wave was coming and we have to be worried and get all the buckets and stuff off the beach. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's amazing.
So what led you then towards scuba diving? Because it certainly wasn't trying to get into tidal waves, I don't imagine.
No, not at all. Actually, I've been fascinated with ocean documentaries. Like I've had Blue Planet 1 on DVD for as long as I can remember, and I've watched it so many times, and I just recently upgraded to a Blu-ray copy because hey, gotta step it up. And I've been super fascinated with ocean docs, and like I just love the ocean, so I really wanted to like see it further. But it took me until I was about 20-24 before I actually took my first scuba diving lesson.
Okay.
I went snorkeling once, but scuba diving was a different beast altogether.
So tell us a bit about that.
It was my one buddy. He was my best man at my wedding, but me and him did all of our courses together pretty much in the span of 3 months. We went from like open water to rescue, and then we just kind of stopped at rescue, and we just dove ever since. And it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago now. But I'm so fascinated by the ocean, and then seeing all the little critters, seeing everything I can, and going extra slow. I'm usually the slowest person on the dive because I'm taking my time going through like every inch of sand looking for something small.
When you took your open water course, you did it a little bit later on, but what was that experience like? Were you really excited? Were you natural, or how did that go?
I was very excited, just to get a chance to do it finally. After all these years, I guess my buddy kind of just pushed me into it and I was totally down. So when we did like the first pool dives and everything, usually from what I've heard from a couple of people, that taking that first breath is always such a challenge for some people. And I was just like, I took it immediately. I was like, this is excellent. This is so cool.
Awesome.
So excited to be under.
And then you went straight into doing your advanced and rescue, and you did all that really quickly. So how has your diving career progressed since then?
I would say I've just been practicing skills, so to speak, I guess, buoyancy and everything like that. And I take the odd special course or specialty course every once in a while. And it's been pretty slow. I've just been going out and diving pretty much.
Do you have any intentions of going pro, becoming a dive master or instructor at some point?
Well, yeah, that's the ideal situation. I know signing up for charters and contacting dive shops out here, when I'm contacting them, I'm writing up everyone's info and I'm like, oh, dive master, instructor, rescue. I'll get there. I'll do it one day. Yeah.
That's awesome. It's good you're practicing, though. Amit will tell you he loves drills. That's all he does. Oh, he muted himself.
He would tell you if he wasn't muted.
Yeah, if he wasn't muted, he would let you know how much he loves drills.
yes. Always a good point. But it is true. Like, there's no question about it. I'm all over the drills. And, on occasion, people force me to go on recreational dives just for fun and to look at things. But one has to endure that from time to time to maintain your dive buddy relationships, right? Yeah. That's just kind of how it is.
On your scuba daughter's birthday, you have to go for
a
dive.
So, Colin, I guess that being said, we've already outed me as being a drill person, but what kind of diving interests you the most?
I love fish identification. I know that's kind of, light and fluffy, but that's my jam. I love rockfish, and I'm not afraid to say it. Their grumpy faces are awesome, and the way they come up to you and just scowl, but they just keep coming and keep hanging out with you is just so cool.
And what is the coolest dive you've done so far?
There's been a couple. Most recently, I was out diving on the island and got swarmed by just a pack of sea lions, and they just hung out the entire dive. And it was just insane. They are giant sea dogs, but they are giant, and they love to just kind of push you around and taste your dry suit and your hands and your head. And it's an interesting experience for sure. And then I was out North Vancouver Island, which is absolutely insane with the amount of life that's out there. Just the currents that rip through are just crazy fast, but they bring so much life. And went on a drift dive, my first actual drift dive up there, and we just shot past this wall, and from like top to bottom, covered in life. Every square inch, there was 3 or 4 or 5 different species, and just my eyes were wide open and just trying to take everything in all at once. And it was intense, but it was amazing.
Wow. That sounds fantastic. I mean, we know you're an underwater photographer, but did your photography career start on land, or was that something peaked by diving?
It kind of started on land. Like, I think I've liked cameras. I'm kind of a tech guy, so I like gadgets and all that kind of stuff, and all this new gear is always fun for me. And cameras really interested me when I was a kid, and so getting a chance to take photos was awesome. And I actually bought my first, I guess, mirrorless system a couple years ago. And it was just an entry level, and I played around with it, not really knowing what I was doing. And it wasn't until, 3 years ago that I got really, really into it, trying to figure out how photography actually works and how cameras should be handled and should be treated and how to take a proper photo with them.
Right.
But underwater, I haven't really had a chance to dive too deep into it, pun intended. But for the most part, I started out GoPros, like everyone else, and I guess that was about 5 years ago, and slowly kind of got upgrading to different GoPros, newer GoPros and better imaging. And actually most recently, which is, kind of hard for me to say, but I've been shooting on my iPhone.
Oh, so really?
All my photos and videos that have been pretty much for the past 2 years have been all on my cell phone.
Oh, really? I was definitely checking out your Instagram earlier and noticing the night shots, it's amazing, I guess, what you can do with an iPhone and a underwater housing these days.
Well, that's it, right? The cameras keep improving and getting better and better, but, it's it's no mirrorless system or SLR for sure.
Yeah.
And I've actually just bought a new camera.
Oh. So
I've upgraded again. And now I just got to, you know, save a lot of money for the housing. So.
And what do you enjoy photographing the most?
Rockfish.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. For real though. Yeah. Rockfish and of course octopus. Octopus are absolutely fantastic, especially out here. They're massive, massive, massive. And just getting up close to one is already a thrill. And then trying to get the proper shot of its eye or its giant suckers as it like kind of slithers around. Really, really fun. But I also really like, yeah, rockfish, of course. But the small things, like trying to like get the small, weird looking things, like some funky shrimp and just following him around for a while. Or the great grunt sculpin that's out here. It's just this little fish, maybe, I don't know, a couple inches long. But he hops along on his fins, and as he hops, he lets out a little grunt. So it's like it's really cute to like watch him move around. And so following them, where it's just adorable.
And the nudies, taking nudes, your nudie photos.
Taking nudes, as many nudes as possible.
Yeah,
just send them all
always. Yes, exactly. Posting your nudes, taking your nudes. It's great.
Drawing those nudes.
Yeah, drawing the nudes.
It's a great follow-up to last week's talk. With Jen Meisner.
Actually, can I tell a quick side story while we're on the nudes topic? We were one of our, so there's a group of girls here. They call themselves the nudie girls because they always go looking for nudies. And they're friends with this guy who runs the Alien Museum in Shag Harbor. And he was on a podcast, so we were watching it. And they did a dive with him. So we were commenting because their podcast is streamed live. And we were like, hi from the nudie girls. And then we got blocked from this podcast, like YouTube channel, because they thought that we were like being like trolls or whatever and trolling their podcast. And the guy on the podcast live actually said like, oh, we have some trolls in the comments section right now because we said hi from the nudie girls.
Oh,
but
geez.
Then after they actually wrote us like a formal apology being like, oh, we understand now that it's nudie prank girls and not actually nudie girls. And anyways, so that's where we got in trouble with nudie girls.
Little did they know you're talking about bright, colorful sea slugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's something else. All right. Now, I did have a bit of a, I don't know if I would call it a follow-up question, but it's definitely something, I don't know, maybe I feel like I always want to ask photographers, because I'm definitely a guy that attends many dives with people who take photographs. And I have never really gotten into it. So I'm curious, what's the draw in terms of like going down there just to take these pictures? Like what's the big thing that makes you want to do it over and over and over again and devote this much time to it?
For the most part, I would like to tell a story. Like that's my goal. And so a lot of, with videos and photos, I love to just try and bring the people that are looking at it into that environment just to see what I'm seeing at that moment. So especially when it comes to like octopus or even that grunt sculpin, I did a video not too long ago where it was just like a grunt sculpin hopping around on the ground, but I wanted to try and push and tell a story with them. And so it was like going out for a stroll with this little guy and yeah, like just trying to recreate a better shot. So even if it's the same subject, going after day in a day after day, recording the same subject, like I love the idea of telling a story. And I guess that goes back to watching those nature docs all those years ago. It's just like their storytelling is mind-boggling that they could just put all these shots together and have this perfect elaborate story of a cuttlefish hunting a crab but trying to hide away from a shark. And you're just like, oh, that's just having everything, having that mindset is just super neat to me.
Mm-hmm. And do you find it difficult or time consuming to be able to build those stories? Like when you do this, like say, for example, like one of our hosts, Nick, who's not on the show right now, I've been out with him numerous times where he's trying to capture a few shots and that might take months, like for him to actually get the couple of shots he wants to be able to do that. So how is the patience? You know, how do you have patience for that? I guess like when you're doing this and is that the same for you?
Yeah, it's actually quite similar. A lot of the times we're out there at the same site, like diving the exact same site, same location of the site, looking for the same critters for months at a time. And it's good to have a buddy that does it too. So when you're doing it, you don't feel so bad that you're just holding everybody up. It's nice that you could be like, well, I'm going to sit here for 10 minutes and I'm going to waste all of our NDL just filming this one little nudibranch just crawling across the ground. And he's just like, cool, I'll be right over there doing the exact same thing. Or maybe I'm going to go film this crab for a little bit. And so it's just nice having those type of buddies. And so I never feel like I'm holding really anybody up when I'm just taking my time.
No, I think that's super cool because, I definitely am one of the guys with the short attention span when it comes to that. But yet I look at pictures from, you know, we'll say some of our local dive photographers here, like our, you know, my buddy Nick, or we've got some other great photographers that are on site that we've interviewed on the show as well. And I can say for sure that whenever I look at the pictures, I always think, I really got to just dive with these guys and not worry about what I'm doing and just kind of pay attention to what they're doing. Cause I think it could open up a different side of diving to me that maybe isn't quite as accessible or necessarily of interest, because half the time I have no idea what I'm looking at. So, you know, I think like you're saying, fish identification and, or, you know, organism identification, that interest layer might be able to get a person there. So yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was out diving recently with one of the DMs on a charter, and it turned out just to be me and him in a group. And so we went out together, and he's one of the guys that kind of just sit back, and he's a DM, right? He's been doing a DM job for a very long time now. So he's looking after people and going with somebody that he doesn't really have to look after. And we're kind of self-reliant, like, you know, we're pretty copacetic. And then I would go and like point out something small to him that he's never seen, even though he's dove this site 20-30 times, and he's never seen this tiny little thing that just is native to being there. And so he was super pumped that I was on the dive with him, because I was just pointing out these small things here and there and things he just never thought about looking at, I guess.
Yeah, those guys like Lloyd and Wayne and Bob Semple here, those are kind of like our local guys that also do what you're talking about. And I can say, you know, relating back to some of their pictures, I'll actually look at them and go, we have these things here? I had no clue. And nudibranches being one of them, right? Like, you know, like I got hundreds and hundreds of dives here. God forbid, I think I might have seen two nudibranches in my entire time diving because I just don't slow down to... Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
So yeah. that's exactly it. So maybe I need to slow it down a bit and dive with some folks like you.
Stare at more rocks.
Yeah, stare at lots of rocks. Lots of rocks.
So I mean, you've told us some of your, you know, favorite diving photography, you know, like situations and what drives you to do it, but do you have like specifically a favorite photo that you've taken? And if so, can you describe it to us?
Oh, yes, actually. And it's pretty simple. There's not much to it. I was along the Halkett Wall, which is one of my favorite dives out here. And it's just, there's this one section of wall that's just covered in these giant plumose anemones, bright white plumose anemones. And the water is so dark green. And there was this one shot that I got, and I wish I would have stayed there longer to try and like get a little, like, I guess, footage of it just swaying in the wind. But turned out I only got like half a second of the footage because I was trying to switch to a camera. Anyways, I took a shot, and it's an angled cliffside, but it has these giant bright white plumose anemones just reaching out from it. And on the background is just like this rich, rich green. Like there was no fish, no really anything super dynamic, but I just love that shot just from the color contrast itself. I thought it was really dynamic.
Sounds like an amazing shot. Awesome. Thank you.
And I know diving in BC, the seals are a huge hit. Have you ever photographed some seals before?
Actually, yeah. This past year has been kind of seal centric, I guess. So yeah, that dive with the sea lions was bonkers and a lot. But I think maybe about a month earlier, me and my one buddy were coming back around a bend at Kelvin Grove, one of our favorite sites, and this seal just like kind of came out of nowhere and I started like tugging on my fins, but I didn't really know that it was there. And so my buddy's like trying to signal to me. He's like, look, check it out. And I'm like, I turn around. Of course, the seal's gone. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I don't know what you're saying. And so we go up further, closer around the corner towards our safety stop. And the seal just came around and then just hung out with us for a very long safety stop. That safety stop turned out to be like around 35 minutes of just the seal hanging out with us in the shallows and just like tossing sea stars at us, like showing us where it hunts and like spinning in circles and how dynamic and aerodynamic it is. And just adorable too.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah, it was a one of a kind of experience. And I luckily had my camera there and I recorded as much as I could and try to piece it together. But yeah, it was a remarkable experience.
And are they easy to photograph or do they move so quickly they're difficult?
It depends. I think you were saying earlier, the visibility is limited.
Oh, true.
So if it's a beautiful day, like maybe, but they're so fast. And usually they just like to zip right by you, especially on a night dive, that they just like whoosh, gone right in front of you, of course, just to give you a little fright. But photographing them is it's tough. So like video, much easier. just point in a direction, right? You're good to go.
So do you bring a camera on every dive just in case, or do you do that crazy thing of just going down fun dives on occasion?
I bring it every time. Like, just, you never know. but also my buddies do too. So it's like we're at the top as we get all our gear set up, you know, BCDs on the tanks, weights in. Everyone's in. Oh, takes a good another 10 minutes of just setting up their camera gear, making sure the air pumps are done and everything's sealed and properly turned on, and everyone has their batteries and SD cards and all that stuff. So
you should go for like one dive without a camera and it'll be the best dive of your life and you'll see everything you've ever wanted to see, and that's everything exactly on your bucket list will get checked off immediately.
Humpbacks, orcas, you know, everything. They'll show up all at once. It'll be great.
Orcas riding humpbacks.
Right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned that you bought a new camera and you're saving up right now to buy that new housing. But can you tell us about the new camera that you ended up going with?
Well, it's a beautiful camera. I love it a lot and I hope for the best. It's a new Sony camera that they just came out. So it was a hybrid between video and photography, which is the A7 IV. And it kind of just checked every single box that I was looking for. Originally, you know, the big hit is the GH5, of course, video, amazing. Mm-hmm. And so that was my goal. And then the A7 IV was announced and I was like, that sounds amazing. You know, I hope it works for underwater, but I'll pre-order. And I was like, ooh, just sweating buckets after I pre-ordered it, hoping that it's like, you know, meets everyone's expectations. But so far, so good. And I actually took it to the Vancouver Aquarium just to give it a taste of what it has to look forward to in the future, whenever I can afford that housing. So 5 years.
Folks, if you're listening, he has a website that we'll talk about probably at some point here where you can probably help him.
Help support and buy the, get that housing, get those beautiful photos.
I had a quick question. We're just doing too much crosstalk. And I keep jumping in with these random questions for you from, you know, from the land of I don't understand photography, but that A7 IV that you have, that you just purchased, like I just Googled it really quickly and it doesn't have a mirror. So it's a mirrorless camera as well. So do you, I guess as a photographer, is there really a difference between a camera that has, that uses the, like the DSLR type technology and the mirrorless cameras? And, you know, is that a thing that we're seeing is still a big factor in quality of pictures?
It's hard now. Like, technology is improving so fast and cameras are getting so good that it's like the difference between an SLR and a mirrorless system now is literally just size. And a lot of manufacturers now are kind of steering towards the mirrorless system because it's so small and compact. And so all the lenses are being made, all these new lenses are being created for the mirrorless system. And like SLRs are just kind of being left in the dust, which is kind of disappointing, to be honest. But at the same time, like, hey, I got a mirrorless now, so let's do it. Why not?
Right. I'm in
it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I guess, can I follow that up to ask then, you know, you mentioned that they're almost there in the sense of like, so it can accomplish almost the same thing that, say, a DSLR type camera will accomplish. What do you see as the shortcoming for, you know, for a person shooting, say, potentially with like a mirrorless camera? What are you going to miss? Is it a depth of field thing? Is it a contrast issues? Like, you know, again, coming from the I'm a dummy that doesn't understand, but I am curious because I've seen this debate not just in scuba diving and or underwater photography, but, you know, questions come up in other areas too, where people are saying like, well, you know, DSLRs, it's they're the best. And we still have guys who will probably hang on and be like, film photography is, it was the greatest ever. So I'm just curious, as, you know, as a layman, a lay person, how do you see that? What is it that you're missing when you go from one to the other?
Honestly, I think it's super minor. Again, so the cameras now are just insane. The one thing that is actually really nice for the SLR system was their range of lenses. So The amount of glass you can actually interchange with these systems is way larger than what mirrorless has right now. But I mean, they're catching up and all the manufacturers are making them now. And so Except for Canon's kind of been slow on the uptake, but Sony's kind of taking over, which is kind of cool to see.
Interesting.
Well, we're going to think about lenses and cameras and which ones we want to buy next. And we're going to take a short surface interval and we'll be right back with more from Colin Hansen. If you'd like a chance to win a Dive in the Podcast decal and a chance to win an awesome hoodie from us at the end of the year, send us a voice message via our voicemail button at diveinpod.com. Answer our favorite question: what keeps you diving? Messages should be no longer than 30 seconds. We'll pick our favorite each week and play it in the next episode.
This episode of Dive in the Podcast is brought to you by Torpedo Rays Scuba.
You can find them online at torpedorays.com.
They've been teaching Canada how to dive for 25 years and are a proud sponsor of this podcast.
If you're in Atlantic Canada and want to take a course or see the shop, stop in and see us in Dartmouth and check out the huge selection of scuba, apnea, surf gear, and much more.
Dive tours are available for locals and visitors to experience all that our ocean playground has to offer.
TorpedoRays.com has a vast selection of dive gear at unbeatable prices, with free shipping available in Canada and quick shipping throughout North America.
So visit TorpedoRays.com or stop in the shop and you might even see one of us there.
Next on the podcast is our Desert Island Question Special with our guest Colin Hansen. Our Desert Island questions and answers are a reward for our patrons, but only for 30 days. Then anyone can listen. To hear this part of the show, head on over to patreon.com/diveinpod and give them a listen. So, Colin, you're about to be stranded on a desert island. Your boat is sinking. What movie or book or music album or...
Welcome back. You're listening to Dive in the Podcast, and it's time to dive back in with our guest, Colin. Colin is a photographer, diver, and artist from BC. So Colin, in the first half, we talked about your photography, but you also do some drawing of marine life, which I think makes you very unique. Can you tell us a little bit about your artwork?
Yeah. So I guess it started about a year and a half ago. I have been going into dive shops and like other aquariums, and I see, like, of course, you know, the whale sharks and the stingrays and the sharks and all these tropical fish, and I just never really saw anything that was from the Pacific Northwest. So like our rockfish, our greenlings, our octopus. So of course octopus are around, but none like the giant Pacific. And it was just like, maybe this is something that I could do to change that. Maybe I could start drawing them and see if like I even like them, or if I like my artwork that comes out of it. I've gone to school for art, but in a different kind of capacity. I work as a 3D lighting compositor for a company out here that works for children's games or television. So I work on a lot of kids shows throughout the day, and on my spare time, I draw fish. And it's been interesting journey for the most part, like doing all these animals, because not only do I get to look at them intensely on the dive or even research them, but I like add little tidbits under each of my drawings of like, hey, this is how you can identify them. This is usually where they are. I think my goal for this is to make like species identification charts. That would be wonderful.
Ooh, that'd be really cool.
Little updated ones, yeah, with my own art, which would be cool.
Well, I'll tell you something that's been in the back of my mind for about, I don't know, 10 years since moving to Nova Scotia, and that is the fact that there is no real species identification cards for the, especially for the, like, Northwest Pacific, sorry, Pacific, wrong ocean, Atlantic Ocean, Northeast Atlantic, anyway, whatever. This place right here, Nova Scotia, and like Maine and all that, where we have the same species, and we don't have a ton, like, we don't have the biodiversity you have out in BC, but so it'd be a super easy ID card. I've half a dozen times almost hired like artists on Fiverr to try to draw up our local fish. But I'm never actually going to follow through on it. So make sure you do a East Coast one.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. I get requests all the time for tropical fish, but I'm like, oh man, my list of Pacific Northwest is just so long. And I'm like, I'm only at 30. I'm just like going through, like, people are asking for like anemones and kelp and, you know, limpets. Yeah. I'm like, limpets, come on guys, we'll get there, I promise.
Is there a way you can tie in this like marine art hobby past, you know, side hustle with like your work on like kids programming and stuff? Is there something that can be done there?
I looked into it. I was in the process of making my own show.
Oh.
And hopefully, you know, trying to make it more ocean forward. But yeah, life, you know,
yeah.
It kind of gets in the way. But yeah, it, like, getting into and creating these cartoon, like, television animated shows are just like, there's so many people involved, and the timelines that you need to try and make it is just like, it's a challenge, but I'm slowly getting there.
Nice. I can't wait. You know, let us know if something happens there. We'll bring you back on to chat about it again.
Nice.
Yeah, I have it pictured in my head. My daughter grew up, obviously you guys are too old to likely know this, but she grew up watching Octonauts, and now we have a second generation being my niece who's grown up watching Octonauts, and I'm actually astounded at the amount of legitimate information that they put into that little cartoon show that, you know, runs whatever, 15 minutes an episode or something like this. So yeah, I mean, I think if you had a mechanism for putting those two things together, there's got to be a market for it, because kids absolutely love the ocean, I think. And you know, I mean, the creatures that you're seeing, that divers are seeing, they obviously don't have an opportunity to. And so I feel like there's a bit of a market in it, but that's obviously from a very biased sample size. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, especially, like, I don't know. I know this is, I guess not everyone's favorite movie, but Finding Nemo actually is my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. It inspired me into my career, and just having that on like Blu-ray and seeing the details that they put in is just kind of mind-boggling. And like even the small things that they talk about on the show, or when Mr. Ray's flying over the coral reef as he's singing about plankton and like single cell organisms. I'm just like, and the kids just right over the head, but one day they might look back and they'll understand, which would be really cool.
Yeah, and you know, and they do. Like, I'll throw. I didn't even remember this, but I remember being. Well, I didn't remember the thing itself, but I remember being in the ocean with my daughter, just snorkeling around. And this would have been, I want to say, Cozumel that we were in, and there was a siphonophore that was like floating by, and I could not remember for the. I was like, look at this thing, Aurora! Like, it's so great, blah blah blah. And I'm pointing it to her, and I can't bring it out, like the thing that I'm trying to tell her about. And she's like, yeah, it's a siphonophore. And I'm like, I look up and I'm thinking, well, glad that she's here to educate me on this. And when I, you know, when I referenced it back, the reason she knew about this thing was from this educational child show, right? So the retention for what they have is really quite high. And, you know, they can bring it out at a moment's notice when probably my mind is jumbled with so much other garbage that I can't think straight at any given moment. You know, these kids are, they're just like little Einsteins tearing around, right, with all this information at hand. So you got to keep it going. Now, speaking of Einstein-like things, I got to say, your logo is pretty awesome. The octopus wrapped around the salt shaker. Tell us about how you came up with that.
Well, thank you for one. honestly, like it, I guess my logo, my whole kind of getting salty itself started as a YouTube channel, like way, way back a couple years ago. And it was like really bad videos, super shaky GoPro videos. But I was like, oh, I need some sort of logo to go with it, right? To make it more professional instead of, you know, practicing my buoyancy. But I was like, oh, getting salty. And I was like, my favorite animal is an octopus. And I was like, salt shaker, octopus, and on a salt shaker. I was like, that could be neat. And so, yeah, it took me like, I don't know, a couple more than a few redraws to try and make it look good. But yeah, I ended up loving it. And so I kind of stick it on everything, which is great.
It's pretty cool, I got to say. I'm a big fan of it.
And all of your stickers. So when you draw them, are you drawing them from memory or are you referencing your own photography to draw them?
Definitely my own photography, but I also have a web page full of other photographers' work or other images of the animal and like bio sheets and like kind of measurements of how big they are and all this kind of stuff. Just all my other monitor, like you should see my workstation at home. I have a few monitors going at one time. And so I have like a couple things here, a couple things there, some actually in Photoshop that I'm looking at while I'm doing it. And I'm just like, yeah, just make it close. Yeah, a lot of them I try my best to reference as closely as possible while still making it, you know, somewhat illustrative.
And you were super nice and mailed me a few of your stickers, which is awesome. And when I got them just like in person, I couldn't believe how beautiful they were and how much detail they have. And I was like really, really blown away. And I've been showing them off. And it's funny, I've been talking about this for years, but I have what I call sticker anxiety. So I'm like, I only get one shot at sticking the sticker somewhere. So I literally have all of these stickers that I haven't stuck anywhere because I don't, like, Justin, I still have my Halifax free diving sticker that I haven't stuck anywhere because I'm that, like, I have that much sticker anxiety. So I'm still trying to figure out where to stick your stickers. And I was like thinking about it on a tank, but then I was like, what if it wears off over time? And anyways, but no, they're beautiful stickers is what I'm trying to get at. But what made you like do stickers? Was it just like, oh, I have these beautiful art and I want to share them? Like what led you to stickers?
Well, originally it started with like, I wanted to make my own shirts. I didn't see like the animals that I wanted on shirts to be on shirts. So I was like, I'll put them on shirts. And that kind of spiraled into like, talking to screen printers and all this other stuff that just got kind of out of hand. And I was like, one of my friends came up to me. They're like, why don't you just make it stickers? And I was like, I think you're onto something. This is a good idea. I don't think anybody wants like 30, 40 shirts of just a single animal with their name on it, but who knows? Maybe that's just me.
So aside from stickers, then what else are you developing there? Is there anything else you're selling? Merch wise?
I've got t-shirts, tote bags. I'm looking into, I guess, other means. So like, I guess, enamel mugs would be cool. I'm looking at water bottles. But in the meantime, apart from like doing all these singular animals, I'm working on a children's book about a little nudie, actually. Yeah. Nice. So there was a image I took earlier, early winter, of this tiny little yellow dorit just sitting there in the eel or in like the grass and the kelp. And there's this giant boulder behind it covered in anemones. And I was like, that would be a really cool kid's book. And so I've been kind of putting that in development right now.
Wow. Sounds like you have a super creative mind.
Yeah.
Or just no time to do other things. So dive, draw, work. Hey, it's not bad, but I'm into it.
Yeah.
You should do, like rash guards or bathing suits.
Actually, yes, I was looking into that. My most recent tote bag was spiny lumpsuckers that I put all over the tote bag. And I was thinking of doing that with rash guards as well.
Yeah.
So that might be coming soon as well.
You should do a nudie rash guard because the nudie girls, we want to get some bathing suits, like beachwear. And we can only find one nudie bathing suit on Etsy. And it's like, okay. But yeah, you should come out with some cool... can you come out with a whole nudie girl line? For
I'll work on it. Yeah. Yeah, but we'll talk. We'll see what we can do.
Your new marketing director, April, she's going to be running the show.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
That's awesome. And you mentioned it earlier, but you do have that YouTube channel. And I watched a couple of your videos and I thought that they were super cool. And you're kind of exploring the scuba scene of BC. So can you tell us a little bit about your YouTube channel?
Yeah. I love storytelling, but for the most part, those are just like dive days. So just going out on a dive, this is what I saw. These are the animals. I do at one point, now that I have this mic, maybe do voiceovers or something like that. It was pretty much just telling the story of what I saw that day, kind of what everybody else starts, you know, doing with their YouTube channel. And we'll see where it goes. I do, with this new camera, want to start maybe recording a little more professionally, but we'll see. There's a lot of practice I need to get under my belt before I get there. So.
Very cool. And so now you mentioned a couple of, like, obviously we've been talking about a couple of the opportunities that have come up, you know, that being the merchandise factors, the potential for like the children's book. Are there any other opportunities that you have come across that have opened up to you because of diving?
Yes, actually. One of your previous guests, Hamish Tweed, I made a giant painting for him for his 50th birthday. The glass sponge reef of BC. And just 172 rockfish and like 5 or 6 quillfish and all these other things. And I paint them just as well as I would with every other thing. So it took me quite a long time and it was quite a big piece. But that actually opened the door to me speaking with them more, becoming friends with them. And now I'm helping out on a lot of their sponge research dives. I'm not doing the dives per se because, you know, they go a lot deeper than my specialty will require, but I help out on top and I help like organize tanks or assemble gear and drop down to them or help them get out of the water. And the last time I was out there with them, I was taking photos from the surface in my dry suit. So floating in the middle of that sound as they're doing their safety stop with a big lift bag and they're just sitting there with their rebreathers. And I'm just like, oh, that's so cool. One day I'll get there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know, and doing that is the way to get there.
Exactly. Yeah. Just knowing the right people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. Do you have any big goals on the horizon?
Well, I mean, this was one of them for sure.
Ah,
a new goal. Yeah. But it came around pretty fast and I really am pumped about that. But yeah, I want to do a lot more actual work in diving. So I want to progress in diving for sure. DM is on the horizon at one point. But... yeah, I'm, like my other goal was like pushing out to other shops and going across, I guess, into the States to see what they might do. But I know dealing with taxes from Canada to the States is a little iffy. Yeah. So, but I guess it's more diving, focusing on filming, focusing on photography, and trying to pursue that as well as my artwork.
Awesome. Well, we've talked about your YouTube channel, your stickers, your Instagram. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, well, on YouTube, it's Getting Salty. My website itself, you can find pretty much all my merch that I have for sale is www.gettingsalty.ca. And on Instagram, I don't have TikTok and I barely use Facebook, but on Instagram, it's Getting Salty. So you can find me there too.
Very nice. Cool. And what keeps you diving, Colin?
Everything. The life, the people that I meet along the way, the passion that the community has out here, and also the fact that it's cold water and a little challenging. Like I have less than I could count on my fingers of warm water dives, but you know, a couple hundred of cold water. So that's what keeps me going out here. It's just seeing all the weird and creepy and dark places, but you know, seeing the beauty behind it too.
That's awesome. That's a great answer. And I can say, having done 2 dives on the Pacific coast in my entire dive career, I can see why people out there love to dive. And, you know, I mean, the Great Pacific Octopus, I would agree with you, probably the most amazing thing I've ever seen underwater. And so, yeah, it's really appreciate you sharing some time with us and having a chat about how you're spreading the word about, you know, the South, or I guess, what did Justin say? The left-hand side of Canada and
the, left coast. Yes.
The amazing life that it the has left to side. Offer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Awesome. Thank you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Colin. This was awesome. It was cool to chat in person. I know we've followed each other on Instagram for a while. So you start to feel like you know each other when you have that social media relationship. But it was nice to chat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I'll be visiting soon. So
perfect. I know. Can't wait to go diving.
For a dive. Yeah, it'll be great.
And then you can do a lobster sticker after you dove in Nova Scotia. There we go.
There we go. I'm into it.
There we go. Business is moving right along when you got April at the helm.
On In the Dive Shop this week, I'm going to talk a little bit about something I heard in the dive shop. So I know last time I kind of gave like the supply shortage, but this is our show. We can do whatever we want. So it's kind of on theme because last week we were chatting with Amit about stereotypes of tech divers. And I actually had a really interesting chat the other day with a diver in our community. So they are a wetsuit diver who happily dive wet year round. And they feel like they face like some hate and some judgment from others. And we just kind of talked about that for a little bit. And I don't know, I would love to see everyone dive in harmony and get along and keep egos out of it. But I don't know, people are pretty quick to, as I call it, gear shame. But aren't we trying to make the sport more accessible? And I think by gear shaming, we're doing the opposite of that. So wetsuits in particular, I mean, they are a cheaper, wetsuits are a cheaper and way easier to maintain piece of exposure wear as compared to a dry suit. So why are we shaming a wetsuit diver when they're just trying to get involved? And I know even myself, I will dive in my wetsuit any chance that I get.
So that's a good question. And first off, I would like to say that I got mad respect for those people that can actually do that. Because I think if we go way back when, you know, to my, I guess when I was interviewed, since we talked about that earlier in the show, my only intention ever for getting certified in Nova Scotia was to never dive here and to just travel to somewhere warm and dive because I still, you know, I feel like we have beautiful coastlines, just don't have any beaches. So that being said, I would hope that people aren't doing it from a gear shaming standpoint. Like, I know I've definitely been in awe sometimes when I remember, if I go back to my good buddy Colin, when we were diving together a lot, and he'd show up in like November, December in his 7mm suit, and I'd be looking at him going like, wow, what are you doing? And so it was, you know, I guess from that perspective, it was more like I was just in shock at the idea that he was able to tolerate that cold, I would think, more so than the gear shaming. But I do agree with you. It's a good point that we potentially sometimes have, I guess, less of a propensity for checking our privilege when we're with other people. Yeah. And I think that can come up to be something that would be perceived as gear shaming. And, you know, it's a thing that, because I am definitively like an opinionated diver when it comes to gear, I try to not offer opinions or provide feedback to people on things unless it's solicited, because I think, you know, sometimes that can come off the wrong way and people are like, oh, he's really aloof about this thing. And that may not be my intent, but that may be how it's perceived. And so there's two parts, I think, that is at play there when you get into the idea of what gear shaming might be. And so I think part of it is that, you know, are we actually checking our privilege at the door? Are we checking to figure out, like, am I making the statement because it's a legitimate statement about a proper way to do a thing? Or am I saying it because I just happen to have the means and resources to do something way more expensive than potentially another person might? And how does that impact the other person? And from the flip side, I think there's also that question of, if you are a person who maybe chooses to dive with a specific piece of gear, or that's a favorite BCD that, you know what, I've had it for the last 15 years, I love it, it works perfectly, and I'm never going to change it until I have to, then, you know, are you interpreting the statement from another diver as being a critical gear shaming piece when maybe they're just in awe of it as well, right? So I don't really know. What are your thoughts there, Justin?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think what starts out is maybe sometimes divers giving each other a hard time at the beach kind of becomes that gear shaming thing. I'd like to think that'll, you know, not a lot of divers who are legit, you know, like have, you know, oh, I can't believe that person's out here diving in a wetsuit. You know, like, I think they might go, buddy, you got to get a dry suit. You can, you know, maybe then you can actually dive. And then maybe it goes on past there because, you know, right, like you said, maybe not everybody can afford a dry suit. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, mm-hmm. You know, or maybe they just don't, you know, they're just having a good time in their wetsuit, or they tried a dry suit, hated it, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just, for once, I think in this podcast, seeing maybe a hopeful silver lining that maybe it's not an active dismissive thing, but you know, who knows, people can always surprise you. So yeah, I that's what I hope, and I really hope, you know, I hope people aren't giving other divers too much of a hard time, but I guess it is I guess it's happening if you're hearing it, April, because I know we've all been part of the conversation or been around conversations where people gave someone a hard time for wetsuit diving in winter or something.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, I mean, some people either they don't want to dive dry. They're happy diving wet. Maybe it's not in the budget right now. We're trying to get more young people diving. And one thing that a lot of young people don't have is money. So when we're, you know, you're trying to get all these young people into this sport, but you're like, oh, well, you know, you can only look at this club and, you know, we all dive in dry suits. We all have back plates and wings and, you know, all this. And it's very expensive. And it's like, well, you know, you shouldn't have to be in a certain tax bracket in order to dive with our club. Like, everybody should be welcome. And I think by, you know, gear shaming and being like, oh, that's an ex rental BCD. Like, you know, it's just, it's not accepting. It's not making people feel welcome. So, you know, I think maybe instead of caring, like, I mean, of course, as long as it's safe and functioning, like, just not really caring about what somebody's wearing and instead just supporting that they're out and that they're diving is kind of the key to, like, growing. And yeah, then they're, you know, they might start here and they're going to continue on. And I mean, something else that a lot of people complain about is like jacket inflate BCs, like making fun of people who use them. But again, it's like the type of diving you do. And if people can just understand that there are some people who literally all they want to get out of diving is going to Patty's Head and diving in 30 feet of water, looking at a fish and getting out. And that is, like, you know, all they want to do, it's their favorite thing. And we can't all relate to that because, you know, we all have different interests, but sometimes that's all somebody wants to do. And a wetsuit and a jacket inflate X rental BCD will do the trick for that kind of diving.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I will say, now, that being said, I think there's a difference between, are you ribbing your buddies at a dive site? Or, you know, are you actually trying to cause harm to a person? And so I look at that as a dividing factor too, right? Because sure, yeah, like I would agree with you fully, especially coming from, you know, a background where there was absolutely no way that I would ever afford to dive. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. the idea of scuba diving was a thing that was always of interest, but it was not accessible to me. So, you know, I completely empathize with people when they're like, I don't have money to die. I'll be like, hey, you don't even need to buy that. I've got a spare set of regs. I've got a BCD here. You can just take that. Like, I think somebody has one of my tanks that I haven't seen it in probably a year and a half. Cause I'm just like, yeah, didn't have money to have tanks. I'm like, well, here, I have a tank. Like, just take this and look after the tank. Give it back to me when you can get a tank. And so, you know, I think I'm very cognizant of that. In terms of like that kind of how do you encourage people to dive? How do you make it accessible? Well, some of that is that maybe you give up on some of your own stuff. And when I say that, I'm not saying you have to go out and do Goodwill or whatever. But yeah, if you happen to have a spare piece of kit and somebody doesn't have one and you're not using it and, you know, it's just sitting in your garage, well, hey, What difference does it make? Let them have it. Let them dive it. And, you know, maybe you inspire some more folks. But to that other piece that I was talking about, I do think sometimes you will get to a dive site and you may see that there's like, you know, an inner circle group of people. So it's like, if I look, I could think of me and say three or four of my dive buddies who have dove together for now 6-7 years. If I show up at a site, rest assured, we're probably like poking and prodding and we have some foolish comment about how we're making fun about this guy, about what, you know, something. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're translating any of that to other people who may be there or that it's even directed to them. You know, so I do think in certain cases, it becomes then a question of, again, how are you receiving what's going on around you? And what's happening in the various different social circles of the divers who are there. And I think that's worth considering in, you know, and I think I would agree that if anybody was coming out to actually call a person down for coming to a dive site, I've not seen that. I honestly can say in all the years of diving here, I've not seen it. I hope people aren't doing it. I certainly don't encourage it. Sure, if you're going to do something that's going to get a person killed, well, maybe intervene so that it, you know, they don't get hurt. But otherwise, I think our dive community is pretty supportive and, you know, we should look at things from that way and be cognizant of many different facets that are involved in that whole process, right? But sometimes you just got to rib your buddies a little bit and you don't really mean anything by it. But again, rib the buddies that you know, don't rib the buddies that you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think too, like it might, I mean, somebody might dive wet or dive with a jacket PC or whatever it is. And it might not even have anything to do with their budget. They might just genuinely like it. And, you know, it might just be their preferred piece of equipment. And that is 100% okay. You're allowed to like what you like.
I've always contended as the water gets warmer and you wear less wetsuit, it honestly, the BCD becomes less and less, you doesn't really, I mean, unless you're doing something specific where you need to like have some real way to mount your side mount equipment or whatever X you're doing. If you're just going down to the Caribbean, you can dive in a 30-year-old ripped up whatever BCD as long as it holds air, you can dive because if you're weighted right and you're diving, you're probably not doing really anything with your BCD other than holding your tank on your back. So it doesn't even matter what you wear.
I did the open pool night a couple weeks ago and I wanted to try out some of our rental gear. So I wore one of the new Zeagle Marina BCs, which is a jacket in flight. And I don't think I've worn a jacket in flight since I did my open water. And I was like, that's actually a great little BCD. Like I have no problem wearing this at all. And, you know, maybe it was because I was like in my 3 mil or whatever in the pool, but I thought it was really comfortable. So I had zero complaints with that Zeagle Marina.
Definitely.
Another one, which I am super guilty for this one, so is split fins. So we all just rip on split fins. But I mean, there are people out there who just genuinely like their split fins and maybe we should just let them be. I don't know.
I'm going to let them be, but I'm not changing my position on split fins. Sorry.
No. And I think you're allowed to dislike stuff. But I mean, we are brutal on people who like and dive split fins. But I don't know. Like, there are people that are out there. I think the military is still diving with split fins. And, you know,
that's the only argument I ever hear for split fins. So the U.S. Navy uses them.
I get calls from the military asking for split fins and like almost no one sells them anymore. So they're even hard to track down, but I don't know. Maybe we should just accept that people like split fins.
You got to jump out of a helicopter to go scuba diving. Maybe you need split fins.
We just haven't found out why we need them. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, One day.
Even,
now, you had another interesting topic here, April. What was that other one?
Yeah, I'm getting it, man.
Sorry. I thought, I was just like, split fins is over now.
They're, So even aluminum versus steel tanks. I mean, myself, I almost exclusively dive steel tanks. I'll even take my steel tanks in the pool so I don't have to wear any weight. But I know a lot of those sea foxes, a lot of the girls, I was like, go dive a steel tank and see if you like it. And they didn't. Like, they just found that they didn't like the weight on their back. They didn't like how it was distributed. And a lot of them are like, I'm sticking with my aluminum. I just prefer the aluminum tank. And I was like, cool. Sounds good. I'm glad that, you know what you like. But some people are really hard and they say that aluminum tanks, like, no one should be diving aluminum. And, you know, I don't know. I'm at a point in my life where if you want to dive, piece of gear, because you like it, dive it. And I'm not here to judge. Okay, yeah, Amit, go off.
Why do I have to be that? Justin, why don't you go off on this? I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I have very low preferences when it comes to that. I think my only choice for steel is in cold water with a dry suit. And so because I'm in cold water with a dry suit, it reduces the amount of weight I carry in the water. I dive in side mount, so I can say without question that, you know, given the preference, sure, I would dive with aluminum and take the extra weight. But I hate taking that much weight and trying to find places to stash it on your side mount equipment, which is, you know, I'm not a fan of. So mine is a completely functional piece. And frankly, I think it's a hell of a lot easier to just go dive a couple of 80s, especially when you start getting into tank handling and tank manipulation and stage handling. You know, 80s are just more friendly to dive. Like those Ali 80s, you can whip those things around in the water. You get them neutrally buoyant. You could almost like float them in front of you while you're doing something else. So my preference, honestly, would probably be in side mounted dive exclusively in aluminums. But our conditions and the way that we dive here in Nova Scotia with the type of gear that we dive with makes it prohibitive, right? Like when I throw on that absurd, the super high loft, bear thing, you need probably 20 pounds just to sink the bloody undergarment.
Then
I'll absolutely take a steel. But yeah, my take on tanks is basically, you know, use what you got. In certain cases, use them for practicality. And I don't particularly care one way or the other, like what you choose to dive. For me, it's a pragmatic choice for basically the conditions that we're in.
Yeah, I think it's all a bunch of hooey. Doesn't really matter. You can do whatever the hell you want. And it's very few times in life, and this is true in scuba diving as it is in other things, when someone tells you there's a right way to do something, it's probably not the only way.
Yeah. Yeah. I know neither of you are on Instagram, but a little while ago I made an Instagram post about how I was like, if your dive instructor tells you this is the equipment and this is the only equipment you should have and the only equipment you should dive, that is a red flag and you should run away. Because I love my kit. I love head to toe everything that I dive. I love my dry suit. I love my fins. I love my BCD. I love it all. But do I necessarily think everybody should be diving when I'm diving? No. Like, you have to dive gear that suits you and what you want and what's your preferences. I love mine. I'm at a point right now where there is nothing in my entire kit that I want to change. I love it so much. But I don't think that it's what everybody should be diving. And I think if any instructor is like, this is the suit you should be diving, this is the BCD you should be diving, these are the fins, you should only dive steel tanks, you should only do this, run. I don't know. Like, don't have that instructor, because you need to find gear that suits you and suits your needs and that works for you. So I don't know. Like, every diver should not look the same. We should all have gear that works for us.
Unless you want to look the same.
Unless you want.
Right.
But maybe it won't work for you, is what I'm saying. I don't know. I also think you grow into your gear a little bit. If somebody gave me my F1s, because I did try F1s and I hated them like 2 years ago, and now they're my favorite fins ever because I grew into them and I figured them out. But I don't know, it's okay to evolve as a diver and try new gear and get new gear. It's all good. Gear is good. but
beer's good. So is beer.
I was just going to say good. That's what was going through when you were like, "Beer's good. Beer's good. What is happening
yeah.
here?"
But I don't know. On this show, at the end of every episode, we always ask our guests, "What keeps you diving?" And everyone's answer is different, but they're all kind of saying the same thing. And I think if we all just realized that the tech diver dives for the same reason as the wetsuit open water diver, and we stop shaming each other and judging each other, for our differences on the surface, maybe we could, maybe we could respect each other's reasons for why we dive, but unite over the things that keep us diving.
Yeah, there you go.
Well said.
Yeah. Thank you. Lesson for life, not just for scuba diving. Thanks,
yeah.
April.
Stop judging. Just diving. Yeah. No shame. All dive.
Stop judging, start diving. Is that where you're going?
Yes. Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of, I don't know, there's got to be a TikTok in there somewhere, April.
Yeah. Sure. A tweet, maybe.
Maybe
I don't
a tweet.
Know.
Sure. Awesome.
Scuba
All right.
Grandpa. No, I'm kidding.
Maybe it's a t-shirt or a sticker if only we knew someone who did t-shirts and stickers. Maybe we can do something. Anyway, all right, just
we'll
throw that out there.
On it.
That does it for today's episode. Words are important. I've learned today, mm-hmm. and I've also learned that Colin Hansen has done a lot of cool things, and he draws a lot of cool things, and he has a lot of cool random stuff on his website, and he's I think he's someone that's going to go places. I think he's going to... Seems like a person that
he's
could end
places.
Up... Yeah, he seems like... Could end up as like one of those like octopus, you know, fingers in every kind of media outlet. Kind of like, you know, a Jill Heinrich or something, you know. She's got her, you know, blogs and books and... this and that and the other thing. It seems like that's where he's headed, so be interesting to see how that goes. But yeah, I want to thank him for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure, and thank you listeners for listening to the episode, and we appreciate you for sticking around and listening to us chat for a while. You've been listening to Dive in the Podcast. I'm Justin.
I'm April.
I'm Amit.
Don't forget, you can support this podcast at patreon.com/diveinpod and get some fun rewards for doing so. You visit our website, diveinpod.com, for all the links you need, episodes, merch, and even connect with us on social media.
This episode of Dive in the Podcast was brought to you by our sponsor, Torpedo Rays Scuba.
Thanks for listening.